Welcome to Healthy Rounds. We're the show that provides you with up-to-date medical information, and we answer all of your health questions. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi. It's 11:18 on this snowy Saturday. And as always, we're going to be taking your calls, and you can call in with any health question you have. Today, we are just going to be discussing heart disease and cardiothoracic surgery with my guest, Dr. Stephen Leahy. The phone number is 860-522-9842. And 1-800-966-9842. You could also email me at agalessi@alessimd.com if you have questions during the week. My guest is Dr. Stephen Leahy. Dr. Leahy is the chief of cardiothoracic surgery at UConn and specifically at the Pat and Jim Calhoun Cardiology Center. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
What drew you? I mean, you're new to UConn. You've been in academic practice at Boston. You've been in New York. What drew you to come to UConn?
Well, I think the main reason is the huge push right now at the University of Connecticut to develop a full-time academic service. I've done a lot of things in my life, but the greatest stimulus for me to wake up in the morning and go to work is the opportunity to create new knowledge. So in addition to just taking care of patients and doing, you know, the usual thing that cardiac surgeons do, which is coronary artery bypass and valve replacements, we're also very interested at the University of Connecticut in creating new knowledge in this field and becoming a national leader in this field.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what cardiothoracic surgery is? You explained a little bit. You mentioned a couple of the procedures, but you know, as a physician, and I think in medicine, we all know there's a hierarchy in terms of what you do in medicine. And I think it's fair to say that we would all say that cardiothoracic surgeons are pretty much at the top. I mean, in terms of, you know, the ability to hold a living heart in your hand and repair it, it leaves anyone awestruck to be able to do that. Can you talk a little bit about the whole specialty of cardiothoracic surgery for our listeners?
Well, first off, it's in the name, cardiothoracic. What that means is there's an arbitrarily divided specialty. One would be cardiac. Those of us who go through a common training in cardiothoracic surgery may decide later on in life to specialize only in heart surgery, whereas others of us finish their training and say, well, I'm going to specialize in operations on the other organs in the thorax, which is the chest. So they will perhaps do lung surgery, esophageal surgery, things like that. I myself do cardiac surgery. I chose to do that. But many of my associates who finished their training decided to go into general thoracic and do pulmonary or lung surgery and esophageal surgery. So after that, then all of the problems with heart disease, with the blockages of the coronary arteries, that is attacked and truly attacked by a combined specialty, which would be your cardiologist and your cardiac surgeon. I think it requires both of us to evaluate every single patient. And there are some patients who have blockages in those arteries that supplies blood to the heart muscle. Those blockages are best served by having a angioplasty, which is a balloon that expands the blocked artery, and then a stent placed, which is sort of a metal scaffolding that keeps it open. But then there are some patients that the stent is completely inappropriate for, and they unfortunately have to have cardiac surgery. I say unfortunately because it does require an operation.
At the Pat and Jim Calhoun Center, it impresses me that there has to be this open communication. I mean, it's not a question of who gets there first. It's really a question of cardiology working with cardiothoracic surgeons as well as cardiac rehabilitation and all these other services. Is that the reason for creating, for lack of a better term, centers of excellence like the Pat and Jim Calhoun Center?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think the vision of the people who created this, specifically Dr. Bruce Liang, who is the director of the Pat and Jim Calhoun Cardiology Center, realized that this is a disease that requires a multidisciplinary approach, and it really requires a cohesive working relationship between the surgeons, the cardiac surgeons, and the cardiologists. So, for example, every patient that comes into the center, And it's a complete full-service center, our clinics, our operating rooms, our echo labs, our cardiac cath labs, everything is right there. We will go over every single patient, and this is not easy decisions. And so since we're all sitting at the table, we're truly deciding what is best for the patient. There's no financial incentive. We're all on salary at the University of Connecticut, and it gives us a tremendous freedom to look at every single patient and argue the pros and cons of either approach, whether it's stent or surgery. As I said, either approach, you know, surgery is not appropriate for everybody and stenting is not appropriate for everybody. So this is a perfect forum where we can really knock it around and think what impact is this going to have on this patient? And more importantly, what's going to keep them alive the longest? That's really the bottom line. These people have to, we now have to expect that they're going to go 20, 30, 40 years after this intervention.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how long it takes to become a cardiothoracic surgeon? And I think that's one of the things that people don't necessarily understand is how do you acquire that skill in terms of and knowledge base? There are all different types of residencies. Some are shorter than others. But cardiothoracic is pretty much one of the longer ones. Where are we at now in terms of fully training a cardiothoracic surgeon?
This is a very important question, and this is a question that those of us who have anything to do with the American Board of Thoracic Surgery, which is the board certifying organization to assure quality in all cardiothoracic surgeons, we're dealing with this problem. It's a real hard problem. When I was a resident, 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, and then it's off to a general surgery residency, which takes anywhere from 5 to 7 years. And then after that, you are allowed to apply for a cardiothoracic residency. So when you're done, I was maybe 38 years old when I was totally finished with my residency, and many of my friends were knocking on the door to be senior partners in law firms at that time, and I am just starting to get my first paycheck. So it's a long process to get there. And even after that, I mean it's, you know, I think it took me probably 7 years as an young attending surgeon to finally feel really comfortable. I've seen everything, and I knew what I could do. And more importantly, I knew what I couldn't do. And then it became really fun for me. It still is a tremendous amount of fun. I love doing cardiac surgery. I wouldn't want to have it. Nobody would, of course. But I sure as heck love to do it. And it's a lifelong process. Now, today, we have the problem with the younger people who don't want to spend that much time. So we're trying to figure out how we can tailor the education, make it more focused for cardiac surgery and thoracic surgery. And maybe we don't have to be doing some of the other surgical training that we did in the past.
Well, it's interesting because we always hear from younger colleagues, you know, the loans and the expense of going to medical school and the need to start earning money so that you could start paying off debt. But I think you raise a good question because of the length of training and the excellence of training in cardiothoracic surgery, but that applies to this country.
No,
this
absolutely
is in the United States. So as much as there's this crisis in healthcare, we're still, and I think people have to understand, we're still training the best doctors in the world. And I think
it's two different issues. I mean, you know, one is the healthcare system in the United States, which I think all would agree. All you have to do is open up the newspaper and everybody will agree that this is we're in crisis. There's no question about it. And a lot of very bright people on both sides of the fence are trying to fix that. But the other issue is American medicine, which is absolutely the finest in the world. I mean, why do you think people come here to be trained and then they go back to their countries in Europe or in Asia? So, you know, we truly do have the best medicine in the world here. It's healthcare. That's a different issue, which is a problem right now. And guys like me also work at that and trying to fix that.
We're chatting today with Dr. Stephen Leahy. Dr. Leahy is the chief of cardiothoracic surgery at UConn and the Pat and Jim Calhoun Center, Cardiac Center. And it's really undergoing a revolution here in the state of Connecticut. Putting together a center such as this that's multidisciplinary and able to treat all types of heart problems. Specifically, we're going to be chatting in the next half hour about the actual procedures. For many of our listeners, probably the first contact we ever had with cardiothoracic surgery was when Dr. Christian Barnard transplanted the first heart. And yet that's become fairly common, so we're going to talk to Dr. Leahy about that. And as always, because of the weather, we're going to be chatting somewhat about our storm center. So with that, we're going to fill in some time here with bringing everybody up to date on what they need to know today. And with that, you're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080. In the meantime, let me give you the phone numbers so you can get your questions in. We're talking any general medical question, but also for Dr. Stephen Leahy, who is a cardiothoracic surgeon and is my guest today. The number is 860-522-9842 and 1-800-966-9842. Our guest today on Healthy Rounds is Dr. Stephen Leahy, who is a cardiothoracic surgeon. Before the storm center, Stephen, we were chatting a little bit about cardiothoracic surgery and heart transplants. What's the state now of doing transplants? Have they become more common, or are they being done in Connecticut?
They are being done in Connecticut. They're being done in two locations, one at Yale and one at Hartford Hospital. I think that heart transplants as a special procedure has matured to the point where it's a very acceptable results. It saved a lot of lives. There's no question about it. But I think the real problem is twofold. One is the availability of organs, which is always a problem, not just in Connecticut but any state. And secondly, probably in the future we'll be talking about things like artificial hearts. Right now, the technology is there to make artificial hearts that are very small and easily implantable. But the problem is that the surfaces that are in contact with blood, we haven't been able to develop surfaces that will not form clots. And that's the real Achilles heel of artificial hearts. Once a surface has been developed that will not form clots, then I think you'll see the technology of artificial hearts really take off.
As a neurologist, I guess whenever I got called to the cardiothoracic ICU, it pretty much was for a stroke, and that's always been the problem right along. Has it become less of a problem with some of the new anticoagulant medications at all?
There's no question about it. And there is a number of different ways. The old-fashioned and tried and true Coumadin is certainly great, but there are newer agents now, things like Plavix, which is an antiplatelet drug, and one of the problems with strokes is not necessarily clotted blood, but clotted or clumped up platelets that can form on these surfaces and then be ejected into the circulation up to the head. So these antiplatelet drugs like Plavix are really wonder drugs as far as antiplatelets. And then there are newer drugs that I'm very interested to see what's going to happen with drugs such as Pradaxa and things like that. I don't mean to give a plug to any one company, but this
We could do that because they're not sponsoring, and it's true. And I talk about them all the time. These are the factor 10A inhibitors.
Yeah. And it'll be very interesting when the FDA really broadens the use of that particular drug or those classes of drugs. That might really, really have a major impact on anticoagulation after some of these procedures, because it really is sometimes a problem of complications as a result of anticoagulation. That is a real issue with patients, not the heart operation itself or the heart device, but really a complication as a result of anticoagulation.
You're listening to Healthy Rounds, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Leahy from the University of Connecticut and the Pat and Jim Calhoun Cardiac Center. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion, and specifically we're going to talk a little bit about the future of cardiothoracic surgery. We're going to talk a little bit about stem cells and the use of the heart-lung machine and the heart-lung pump in cardiothoracic surgery. You're listening to WTIC News Talk 1080. We're back on Healthy Rounds. We're in our last segment right now, and if you have questions, we can get some in, and you can give us a call if you wish at 860-522-9842. And 1-800-966-9842. We're with Dr. Stephen Leahy from the University of Connecticut. He is the chief of the Division of Cardiothoracic Surgery. Stephen, we want to talk a little bit about what's going on in heart surgery now. A lot of people hear about the heart-lung machine, what its purpose is. should surgery be done with the heart-lung machine or off the heart-lung machine or the so-called pump and off pump? Can you explain what it is and what the controversy is?
Sure. First of all, the heart-lung machine is a phenomenal device invented. Actually, the first use of it on animals was in the 1930s, but didn't reach human application until the late 1950s. But this device really takes over for your heart and your lungs. If you think of it, if I'm going to operate on your heart, it's very difficult to operate on your heart with the heart working and beating. And how am I going to open it up? I mean, this is like changing a carburetor with the engine still running. It's kind of hard to do. So the heart-lung machine basically tricks the rest of your body. The rest of your body needs oxygenated blood, the brain, the liver, the kidneys. And so if you're going to interrupt blood supply to the heart and work on it, you have to supply constantly oxygenated blood to the rest of the body. And that's what the heart-lung machine does. So for years and years, it was great. It allowed us to do a lot of complex cardiac surgery. Then lo and behold, there was this concept that you could do coronary artery bypass surgery, do the bypasses, without stopping the heart, the so-called off-pump coronary artery bypass operation. No pump involved. And the rationale for this was some people had thought that there would be subtle cognitive or brain function issues if you are put on a heart-lung machine for an entire operation. This might be a reason not to use the pump at all. As it turns out, a lot of researchers looked at this. People have been doing it now for probably intensively 5, maybe even as long as 10 years. And there really is no indication that long-term after 6 months that there is any cognitive disability, whether you use on-pump or off-pump. So the rationale for the development of the off-pump coronary artery bypass is slowly going out the window with respect to neurologic issues. Now, there are some patients that you don't want to use the pump on, very specific issues. And those patients, it's perfectly appropriate to use the off-pump technique. But this is up to your surgeon. This is a surgical decision that has to be made. It's really not a preference. It's a very carefully measured medical decision.
As a neurologist, you know, we see a lot of patients who have cognitive changes after surgery. Yet in all of the studies done, the New England Journal probably published the largest series, no one has ever demonstrated that people who had bypass surgery on a pump were more vulnerable to cognitive decline.
Right, right.
And I think that people have to understand that you really need to trust the surgeon and what the surgeon is most comfortable with performing, whether on the pump or off pump. Before, you mentioned a little bit about implantable devices. Dick Cheney is famous for now having an implantable device. Can you talk a little bit about what these devices are?
Yeah, this is a so-called HeartMate device. These are mechanical devices. It's a device that's probably a bit larger than a hockey puck. And in the device, there is a bladder that inflates and deflates. And as you hook it up to the heart, and so it'll draw blood into it. The bladder inflates, which pushes blood out. It does that 72 times a minute or whatever you set it at. And the problem with this is you can implant it in somebody's chest or in their abdomen and hook it up to the heart. But the drive lines, the so-called pneumatic lines, they have to exit the body and go to maybe a battery pack or some energy source that is going to drive this device. There's always a concern with these lines that come out of your body, exit the skin, and go into a battery pack, keeping that clean, no infections. There's also the issue, as we mentioned before, of clots being formed on the surfaces of these devices. So it's a very big deal. It's a wonderful machine. It's keeping somebody like former Vice President Cheney alive. But when you think about it, it's really kind of a simplistic and not very clever solution to a very bad problem. If your heart can't work anymore, it would make much more sense if you could have something that was totally implantable. You set it and forget it. Or even more interesting solutions might be temporary use of that. And maybe someday we will be injecting stem cells, undifferentiated cells, into the left ventricle so that your own stem cells will be turned on to grow new left ventricular cells. In the meantime, and that may take many months or even years, but in the meantime, you'd be sort of tied it over with this HeartMate or artificial device. That might be a pretty interesting solution.
So do you think the heart devices are pretty much temporary solutions? I mean, now, is it something you would use while waiting for a donation of a heart?
Right. That is the so-called bridge to transplant. That's one strategy we use, and we don't have to use the small device for that. We can use a larger device knowing that this person is on a transplant list and we are waiting for an organ donation, bridge to transplant. But there are these devices which are smaller, which are considered what we refer to as destination therapies. They are not a candidate for a transplant for a variety of reasons. And so they're going to get this device, and that's going to be the end of the road therapeutically for them. We hope that it's not the end of the road, their life. This is going to save their life and is going to prolong their life, but it will be at the cost of a cumbersome, somewhat cumbersome device.
In our closing minutes, I'd like to talk a little bit about the future of cardiothoracic surgery. You touched on stem cells, which everybody is enamored with and amazed by, that where you could possibly regenerate a left ventricle. What other things are coming down the road in the area of cardiothoracic surgery that our listeners need to know?
Well, first and foremost, the future is really going to be in prevention. There has to be a prevention. There has to be a way to put me out of work. Really.
Absolutely. Both of us.
Right. Absolutely. So I'll be very happy if I'm the guy who discovered the medicine that would put me out of work. It would be a wonderful thing for everybody. But short of that, I think some of the future things, the biggest ticket item, the biggest thing right now is the so-called TAVI. That is the transcatheter aortic valve implantation. This is replacing somebody's heart valves without a full operation, but it's done through access through a groin artery, similar to our cardiac catheterization. Now, the problem with this is it is appropriate only for those patients who have no other choice. They are not candidates for surgery because right now, open surgery is the gold standard with the best results, the most durable results. But the hottest item right now nationally, what people are working on, is developing the technology and developing who do we use this appropriately on. And that's a big challenge right now.
It sounds exciting and obviously is one of the most exciting fields. And do you think more young people are going to start going into cardiothoracic surgery again?
No question. No question about it. I mean, like anything, this is a like a pendulum. You know, the cardiac surgery had its great moments, and then it kind of backed off. We were having a lot of hard time recruiting young people to go into cardiac surgery because the training was so difficult. But now we're seeing an uptick in people, and there's going to be a real shortage of cardiac surgeons in the future.
I want to thank my guest today, Dr. Stephen Leahy from the University of Connecticut and specifically at the Pat and Jim Calhoun Cardiac Center. If you would like to contact Dr. Leahy or have an appointment for an opinion at the center, how would they go about doing that, Stephen?
Well, they could contact me by my email address, which is Leahy, L-A-H-E-Y, at UCHC.edu.
That would be great. As a token of appreciation, each guest on Healthy Rounds will receive a copy of my book, Healthy Sports, A Doctor's Lessons for a Winning Lifestyle, courtesy of Backus Hospital. And if you'd like to receive a copy of the book, you can go to my website, alessimd.com, make a donation of $15 to the Backus Foundation, and receive a copy of the book. Many thanks to our studio producer today, Ryan Cosgrove, and all his work on Storm Center. Amy Ashton is in charge of health and sales and marketing at Healthy Rounds. Next week on Healthy Rounds, we're going to be discussing autoimmune disorders and specifically lupus. Our guest is going to be Dr. Melinda Ramsby, who's an MD PhD in the field. Next up on WTIC, Garden Talk with Len and Lisa. Please remember to help save lives by becoming an organ, eye, and tissue donor. You can do that today by going to donatelife.net. Until next week, please stay healthy.